Episode 484 of Global from Asia podcast. Today we got Basil from Make Brands Big Shares, how his agency uses Amazon's latest data features like Halo sales tracking, placement optimization, and granular SKU analysis.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business is broken down into straight up actionable advice.
Welcome to another episode of the Global from Asia podcast. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Mike. Today we've got a real treat. Basil from Make Brands Big joins us. Great to have him back on the show. We actually met in person at the Cross-Border Summit last year in Chiang Mai. Time flies, man. Today we're diving deep into the current state of Amazon PPC, Halo sales insights, placement modifiers, why data is king in 2026, and how you're helping Asian brands scale globally without bleeding margins. Let's jump in.
Okay, thank you everybody for choosing to listen to or maybe watch a podcast here at Global from Asia. I have Basil here with us from Make Brands Big. I got the pleasure to meet him and his partners in Chiang Mai, the Cross-Border Summit earlier last year. Time's flying, like we were just saying before recording. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me here, Mike, actually. It has been 6 months since we last met.
It's nuts.
Like 2 days, right?
It doesn't feel like that long, but I don't know what that means. I guess that's good. We're definitely, I hope you're doing well and busy, but I think it's overwhelming, at least for me, about all the world and the changes. But I'm sure Make Brands Big is doing well and things are good for you.
Yeah, of course. It's a new era for us. Lots of stuff that we actually learned from Cross-Border Summit that we are implementing here as well. But having said that, lots of stuff that we are actually working on nowadays too. I'm right now in Indonesia. We're trying to
Indonesia.
Lots of brands and Asian space as well and see what's happening there. So yeah, lots of exciting stuff that's coming on and we're excited for the year.
Yeah. It's exciting times, man. This is the right mindset. There's two ways with change. Some people hide from it and the other people, I think you and me, we embrace it and we adapt. And that's, I don't know how you can... But a lot of people are avoiding it. Literally, like even before this recording, we started, like somebody was complaining about AI in a negative way. And I don't know how people can be like that, but the world's very interesting. So how did it get started? Originally in engineering, and now you're in the e-com, Amazon, FBA space. So what was some of the earlier days?
Yeah, so I actually completed my engineering in 2022.
Okay.
But I actually started Amazon even before that.
Nice. So,
although I started industrial engineering, but I had 3 or 4 of my semesters that were online. So COVID hit. We were not studying a lot. I was actually a nerd back then.
Yeah.
I used to do some sort of like freelancing gigs every now and then. I used to write research papers, etc. But nevertheless, I started a supply chain course. And then I ended up getting a client from Upwork who was a pretty big seller. He was actually an 8-figure seller. I had no idea about what was happening. I was just managing their supply chain. And I was not even managing their supply chain. I was just opening cases for them. I was just keeping track of their cases, keeping track of what inventory was going, what was not. And that's when I started to realize that, okay, this looks like an exciting world. I'm actually interested in supply chain, but I did not understand Amazon as in Amazon in much detail. And then there were a few Amazon training companies that came into Pakistan as well at that point of time. And that's when my focus actually shifted that, okay, this looks extremely exciting. Let's explore it more. And because I already was working on a pretty big business, I used to ask them a lot of questions that right now, when I think about them, it seemed very naive for me to even ask those questions. But those were rookie questions, right? I used to ask them something as simple as, why do you run ads? Why do you not do SEO? I used to ask some pretty basic questions, and they were kind enough to actually answer all of them. But I think that's what sparked that curiosity that, okay, let me explore that. And that's when I actually shifted completely to this. And by the time I graduated, I never actually did a formal job. I just straight away went all in with Amazon and with e-commerce.
Oh, I think that's the right move. You happy about it so far? It must be, right?
Yeah, I am. I definitely am. I think the biggest liberty that's given me is to be location independent. And then having said that, working with brands which give you so much learning. I think I've learned in the last 2 or 3 years more than ever. And we are still learning each and every day. I still think the more deep we go, the more we understand that We do not know anything, and there's so much data that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's great shifting actually from industrial engineering to full-time Amazon e-commerce.
Yeah, fun fact, I studied engineering too. Quick one is originally computer engineering. My dad and everyone wanted me to be like a programmer, and I didn't like the bugs and such, so I switched to computer engineering management. So it was like the easy way out of business and engineering, but that's my degree. And yeah, engineering is a great background. I feel like so many of us study engineering and don't use it when we graduate. It's just like they think it's good to get technical, right? Like,
yeah,
like they say, oh, get engineering degree, and then you go into business or marketing after, right? Like us. I don't know, but it's definitely a solid foundation.
Definitely. When I actually graduated and when I started doing work, I used to think that nothing from my engineering is actually helping me. I listened to Steve Jobs once, and he said that when you look back, you actually are able to connect the dots. So I think engineering actually teaches you how to solve a lot of complex issues, right? Learn one thing, that is process optimization, where you just, the brands that we are managing, normally the business that we are working with, they're not Toyota, they're not IBM, right? So nothing's perfect there. There's a lot of moving parts. Those are startup brands, or even the best ones, they are doing 50, 100 bills. Those are not like super big companies. They always need more and more optimizations. With engineering, we used to learn this, that you have to focus on the biggest levers in the business. So there's going to be lots and lots of noise. And this is a bit of a problem that I see with agencies as well, that they focus on everything all at once, but they do not go deep into one single problem. So I'd say that we just try to pick up top three problems. And this is something which we learned back from our engineering days, that pick up those top three problems, go deep into them, resolve them completely before moving on to the next problem that you might encounter. So it does help, but not in terms of whatever I saw in my course books. Definitely, I'm not using those terms again.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you like thermodynamics.
I did. I think that was one of the worst subjects that I had.
I don't know. I think I just had a good teacher, because everybody says that, but I actually liked it. I don't know. Like, I guess my professor was fun. He was visual, and he'd have like in equals out. And then you'd have these, I think you'd even draw it on the board where this goes through this process and it becomes that. But it's actually, I think the core was nothing is lost, because things don't appear and disappear. So you'd have to, yeah, but I don't know why I liked it, but I think it was just a fun professor. But
I said that you're able to like such a subject, but it looks good from the outside, but I think I got one of the worst GPAs in there. But I used to like solid mechanics a lot. I don't know. That actually helps us a lot with product development as well.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of the best subjects I think that's out there. It actually has got some very solid practical applications as well, as opposed to a lot of other subjects that we study.
I understand. So you work with private label brands, which normal, like in Asian based, or what's the kind of normal brands you work with or insights?
Yeah. So normally when we are working with brands, of course, a lot of brands are actually sourced from China. But having said that, a lot of those brand owners are actually US based, right? And that's how we started up our agency as well. Most of our clientele is actually in US and in UK. Like two or three brands are in UK. But right now, I think the reason why we are trying to focus a bit more, and me being here in Indonesia as well, is we are trying to onboard a few brands that are in this specific space. We are trying to work with brands which are actually doing pretty good in Indonesia, because one thing that I saw is majority of the brands that are like ruling over on Amazon.com are mostly like Chinese brands, right? So we know that most of the manufacturing is actually done in Asia, like majority of the manufacturing for the most amount of private label brands. But I do know for a fact that if anyone from the US actually starts white labeling a product which is in a commoditized market, and they start to get it from China, just put on their own logo and start selling that product, I don't think that's a very good long-term solution. So I'd rather focus on brands that actually have got some long-term value and that have already proven themselves in their home countries. We've been working with a few Malaysian brands, with a few Indonesian brands that we know that already have seen a product market fit in their own home countries. And right now they are at the verge where they can expand themselves globally and target these Western markets as well. I see them in trade shows trying to find distributors, but I tried to convince them that it's very hard to actually onboard a distributor until and unless you actually go yourself to these marketplaces. You show a distributor that your brand already has got demand, and that's when, you know, those distributors will actually be quite convinced to go ahead and purchase from you because they've seen you in demand in those countries.
Ah, interesting. So then you're in Indonesia for distribution.
We're in Indonesia to get to meet those brands who are trying to get distribution and convincing them that you should rather start selling it yourself for the first,
got it,
first few months, at least to create a demand surge and then move to a distribution model. And I'll give you an example as well, very quick. So there's one of the biggest brands here, one of the biggest beauty brands that has got 32 million Instagram followers in Indonesia. And it's doing at least $20, $30 million in revenue just in Indonesia. And it does export as well, but it's not in US market. But they actually found a distributor who was in US market. He lives in Puerto Rico. And he bought $10,000 worth of goods from them. And that is an exclusive distributor. He told me, I was like, how do you plan to scale yourself to, let's say, 7 figures or 8 figures, or penetrate into a market where your competitors are trying to move a bit quick while working with a distributor who's just buying 10K worth of goods from you? That's nothing on your end. But once actually we convinced them, I think they started to realize that, okay, if we sell these products ourselves, we can actually scale ourselves a lot quicker. And then once we scale to a certain point only, then we can add a distributor along with us as well, who's then going to take over a brand. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. A little bit off my just adding, but you work with clients or brands in West and in Asia. I'd love to kind of hear some differences that you've seen between these generally. I know it's obviously probably depends on the brand and the cultural, because I feel like Indonesia must be harder to convince them to go direct. I have no clue, but that's my guess. So I don't know if I'm close or not.
Honestly, that's true. There's a bit of a difference between those two different clients. So with clients that are based in West, there are bigger brands as well, but a lot of brands that are doing around 8 to 10 mil of revenue, those are purely e-commerce brands, as opposed to in Indonesia, our main focus, and in Asia, our main focus is on some pretty big brands who are already in retail markets and trying to convince them. So there's a certain amount of hierarchy that is involved. And we tried approaching them on our own, but I don't think, so Indonesians are actually very polite people. And I think the same can be said about Thai people as well. They are one of the most polite people. They'll never say no on your face, but they might ghost you.
I know in Thailand like that.
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem. But we have got a few good partners here who are actually in the training space in Indonesia. And we use them to approach to these brands. And that's how our approach becomes a bit easier. But I think directly convincing them, yeah, definitely. It's a lot tougher than convincing someone from the States as per se.
Okay. Yeah, just generally my experience as well. But it's good. I think having local partners helps for sure. And your experience and being there as well. You get to travel and build relationships, which is important and helpful. Let's move on to some of the tactical stuff. We're asking no screen sharing today. Maybe we could do some sessions in the future. But for the podcast, what are some, you know, PPC? Is that your... I know you mentioned focus. You're probably deep into PPC, right? What are you seeing? What kind of... I know you've worked with some clients, you said over $1 million in ad spend savings and things like this. I'd love to hear what you've seen over your experience and some insights for people listening.
Yeah, for sure. PPC, of course, it's a bit like what we say about what money brings to people, right? You already have a personality where it just amplifies your personality. So I think PPC actually just amplifies and places you in front of more eyeballs. Now, a lot of people actually... they do get data. So Amazon's giving you a huge amount of data right now. I think the best amount of data Amazon is giving is right now. So the best amount of optimization that you can do is right now. But a lot of people I see and a lot of brands I see, they are missing on a few very important pointers. And I'll go on it like one by one. I think number one thing and the most important is how much each and every of your campaigns should have a specific objective. And in case... you know, those are, let's say, keyword harvest campaigns or whatever we say, you know, auto campaigns or broad campaigns. But a lot of people actually run those campaigns without keeping in mind their break-even ACoS versus what's the total TAC cost that's coming on the account. So you need to have a look at SKU level performance for every product and then see which one's running profitable and which one's running unprofitable and where I should save the money, where I should reallocate that money. A lot of times brands have got pretty huge catalogs and they're spending with a bit lesser idea about if they could have saved the money from product A and if they were allocating the product to product B, allocating that budget to product B, how much more profit could have they made? And that's one of the biggest problems that we have right now, because actually I do not see any system from a lot of brands for that specific part. But if you have got a huge catalog, you need to know what are your star products. You need to implement some BCG metrics on there. You need to know your star products, your question mark products, your dog products, and where your budget should be allocated. And that can actually be seen from your reports. You can actually see what your current tech cost is going, what your break-even cost is, what your market share is. So you know how much you can improve it. Another very important issue that I would like to raise, and I just audited an account yesterday. So I found this issue there as well when it comes to PPC. So placement is also one of the most important parts of your PPC. You need to know where are you getting better conversion rates. Is it your top of search? Is it your product pages? Is it your rest of search? And even better, is it your Amazon business? We audited a brand that derives 40, 50% of their sales from B2B customers, right? And majority of the placement modifier is actually on top of search. They are just blindly pushing on top of search because, I don't know, maybe they saw somewhere the top of search is the best performance. But what they're not seeing is rest of search is actually giving them some pretty good results. And they're actually losing money on a certain placement type where the brand's objective is to stay profitable. They do not want to bleed money. And they're missing out on a placement type where they're actually making good money. And then because majority of their customers are business, they are not even pushing their product in front of more business customers. So you need to have a very solid understanding of your placement types. And number third thing, and I think that's the most important that I would like to talk about, is halo sales. So Amazon has started. Amazon is actually giving you data on if you're running a campaign and if someone's actually clicking on it and buying some other variation that used to be conversion path, buying some other variation, how much exactly those variations sales are coming in and what variations are bringing in what number of sales. So I think whenever you're running a campaign blindly, but that it's actually bringing in sales for your other products as well, then your decision becomes a bit more conscious. Should I turn it off because it's bringing me sales for other products as well or for other variations as well? Or should I recreate a campaign targeting that specific variation, which is bringing me sales off? A lot of times we see that brands are not willing to turn off their unprofitable campaign, especially if their focus is revenue and if they've got a huge amount of repeat purchase rates, because they're afraid that turning off those campaigns can negatively impact your other variation sales. But where's the data on that? So Amazon is actually giving you data on that. Amazon is giving you your halo purchases from clicks, your halo purchases from views. Amazon's giving you a very deep insight on when one of your campaigns is running, even better when one of your keywords is running, for if some other variation is being bought, on which keyword is the other variation being bought as well. That exactly with this keyword is the one where my other variation is being preferred by my customers. So why should I not put one of those variations onto my campaign or create campaign on that variation instead of pushing it on some other variation or pushing it on some other product and customers actually coming in and then buying some other product or some other variation? So I think those are the three most important pointers that I'm seeing right now.
Nice. The halo one is cool. And that's something that we struggle with a bit, is you're getting sales from on other products. And I didn't know you could actually see if that was the case, but we still focus on core products, but it gives these smaller products some boost too, that we don't do ads on personally. And that's
yeah. Definitely. So right now, what we are seeing is even with the smaller products, you actually get to know from your halo sales that which products you should scale next. You need to understand where should I allocate my budget more. And if a brand has got, let's say, 300 SKUs, but them pushing $10,000 on a specific product, they start to realize from their halo report that one of their SKUs, which they're not even pushing yet, starting to get 3-4K sales. That's when you know that, okay, people are actually interested in this product as well. So I need to test it out. right now and see what's happening. And because you get such a granular level data where you're able to see that which keyword is generating you the most amount of Halo sales, you're able to push your other product to those specific keywords, or using those specific campaigns targeting, you can push your other products as well.
All right. This has been nice. I mean, it still seems like PPC is still the driver, right? Especially in Amazon, but it seems like marketing in general. What have you seen over your time working with brands? It seems like it's more important than ever now. And just some insights would be helpful.
I'll tell you a bit about my 2022 Amazon PPC skill. It used to be extremely simple, quite honestly. And no one used to talk a lot about placement types, about different type of stuff. They used to just run auto campaigns, harvest keywords from there, run it into exact match, track organic things. That's it. You do not need to worry about it a lot. And it actually used to become profitable as well. But right now, because Amazon's giving you such a huge amount of data points, I think if a brand is not analyzing them in detail, you're actually giving that leverage to your competitor, because they're definitely analyzing it in more detail and making those data-driven decisions. So you need to understand your data more than ever, and you need to make decisions based on your data more than ever. And of course, you need to be as much quick as possible, because Amazon's giving you such huge amounts of data. You're able to understand what's working and what's not extremely quickly. And you can then reallocate that budget somewhere else extremely quick. So right now, I think it's the best time. But having said that, it's the most competitive time as well. But the best time is because you've got access to more data. A lot of times we used to complain as well that we are not getting a certain amount of data points. It's very hard for us to take a data-driven decision. We used to go a bit by gut and then see what impact is pausing a specific campaign bringing to other SKUs. And we used to do it manually. But right now, since Amazon's giving us those exact data points, I think it has become more exciting than ever. But if someone's actually missing out on the important data points which Amazon's giving, especially if they're working in a niche which is competitive, I think they're losing big time, because your competitors are not going to spare you. Everyone is having a look at data more than ever. I meet with a lot of Amazon agency owners. I meet with a lot of Amazon brand owners. I meet with a lot of solopreneurs as well. And I don't think people have been more involved with data as much as right now than what they were involved like 2 years ago.
It's true. Yeah, we talked about this at the summit too, and I know you're a big proponent, but we have like more data to work with and all these tools now, and it's definitely a time to go big. Like you say, make brands big. It's another kind of like off-topic question, but I think it's also, would you feel the same, like big or getting bigger, right? Like you got to go big or go home, right? I feel like that's how I'm feeling, the pressure. I have to get bigger. I think if you stay small or comfortable, it's going to be harder, right? So I feel like we have to get bigger. I think that's your thought too, right? As a brand.
I agree. I think we're not an S&P 500 stock that we only grow 10% per year or 15% per year. We have to grow a lot bigger. And I think even with Amazon brands, that's a very small point that I'd like to add. But I've seen that if those are not growing as much as even bigger than their market, they actually eventually start to fall down because competitors keep on coming in. So one thing that you have to also measure, and this is once again for the brand, is your market share. And if you've got a certain market share, especially for the bigger sized brands, if you've got a specific market share in your subcategory, and if your market share starts to shrink, even if your revenue is a bit similar to what it was before, you need to start worrying about that as well. So we have seen that brands who are doing extremely good, they've got, let's say, 10% of market share on a specific market. They have the monopoly and their revenue does not decline because the market size is increasing. But the market share, that starts to shrink in, it starts to become 8% or 7.5%. You need to understand where exactly that 0.5 or 1% or 2%, who's taking away that market share, and take extremely important steps to actually not let anyone outperform you that way. You know, whatever it takes, right? That's another very important metric. You need to not just grow, but you need to outperform a lot of other brands, especially if you are the one who's ruling that subcategory. If you do not increase your market share, or at worst start getting your market share decline, they'll actually fall back. Those competitors are going to take you away, because they're also very much willing to do a launch where there's lots of bleeding. Because I've seen this firsthand, quite honestly, that's why this thought actually came to my mind.
Yeah, no, it's like, I always like your name, the name of your agency, Make Brands Big. It's clear. And I think it's more and more relevant. Like I've said it too in my contents is unfortunately, or maybe it's fortunately, but I feel, especially in Amazon, but I think everywhere, you're going to have to get bigger. It's a little bit sad in a way because there used to be more like small sellers, startup sellers, but I feel you have to go. Of course, I respect the hustle and but I believe now you got to be systematized. You got to grow. You got to go bigger or just sell your brand like a lot of brands have done. Unless you have a point on that, I think we move on. But that's what you do, right? You're helping. Can you give us some insights? Like you have the kind of like complete solution for this?
Yeah. So when it comes to just another one, this is about Amazon private label full solutions, right?
Yeah, well, Alvin will clean this up. But I could rephrase the question. But yeah, I was just thinking like what help promote what you're offering or what you do for brands?
Yeah, actually solution is about full brand management. Because for us, it's not straight only about Amazon PPC. There's a lot of levers that are outside PPC as well. So one of the brands that I was just auditing right now, I saw one of the biggest problems that they had is the add to cart to purchase ratio that actually went down 25%. So it was, let's say 70% in Q1 2025. So 70% of people who were adding their product to cart were actually purchasing it. But right now it's 50% in Q4 of 2025. So that's actually a 25% decline. So even if everything goes well, your PPC is going well, everything's going well, even then 25% of sales are being lost just because your add to cart to purchase ratio is pretty bad, right? It's a lot. Your full Amazon brand management is a lot outside campaign manager as well. Of course, that is one of the most integral parts, but outside that as well, how your catalog is working, how your supply chain is working. A lot of times brands get stuck because the inventory management is not that good. The cash flow management is not that good. They're trying to scale their sales without knowing that if they've got a 6 months lead time, they need to have their capital invested much beforehand in order to ensure that they do not go out of stock. So that's a problem that we face, especially with the new clients, where we're trying to convince them that even if we grow your sales exponentially, that impact will be 6 months from now when you know your next stock will not be there and you'll actually face a stock up. We actually provide end-to-end solutions with that. We help you manage your inventory. We help you market your product better. We try to make the most amount of sense for your creatives, for all your data-driven decision-making.
Okay. Okay, great. Maybe you can share some kind of mistakes, like the first things you see when you work with a brand. What kind of like repetitive mistakes, pitfalls people are making?
Yeah. Number one is, of course, the mistakes in the Amazon PPC, where they're not understanding the importance of data coming in. There's a huge amount of data that is actually left over, not seen. Quite honestly, I see Amazon sellers actually looking at a few amount of data points, and I already know what those data points are as well. They're running auto campaign as keyword digging campaigns. They're running broad campaigns as keyword digging campaigns, and then they're taking out keywords from there, and then they're putting them to exact match campaigns or whatever. But I think we discussed this in Cross Border Summit when Brian Johnson was on the stage about how to rank your product as well. And one of the most important pointers there was you need to understand your performance at each keyword level. What's your relative conversion share and what's your relative CTR and how can you outperform your competitors based on the data points that Amazon's giving you? So in case you do not know how you can outperform or there's not a single proof of performance that you've built with any single metric, you should not actually go deep into that keyword. So until and unless you establish that you've got a better relative conversion share or your top of search impression share is better or your review velocity is coming in extremely good or whatever, you should not go deep into a specific keyword. But once you build that only, then you know you should go deep into that. A lot of people are actually missing that. Before starting to go deep, they have to analyze all of these structures, but they do not do that. Number second, I think another important aspect is the whole Amazon space. I think it's become, with TikTok in here, with a lot of other social media platforms in there, it's a lot about content as well, right? You need to have the best content out there. And a lot of decision making is actually done based on a good amount of creatives as well. So if people miss out on good creatives and think that running the PPC and pouring in more and more ad spend can actually bring them more sales as well, they're missing out on the fundamentals. So if your conversion rate is just 10%, and you're putting in, let's say, $10,000 in your PPC, and you just improve your creatives and that conversion rate becomes 20%, you can do the same amount of sales by doing exactly half amount of ad spend, right? So imagine you're doing same amount of sales with half amount of ad spend just because your conversion rate doubled. And that was only because you went on with better creatives. And even I'll say this one thing with creatives as well. So a lot of brands, and I see this continuously with, this is a problem with a lot of brands, that right now, creatives are also becoming AI. Brands are thinking that, okay, we should use AI with the creatives. So there's no problem with that. The problem becomes when, you know, the text or the benefits that are in those creatives that are also, you know, written by AI. So you already have got a huge amount of reviews that are on your listing. And that is actual customer feedback. You can see what customers are talking good about, what customers are talking bad about. If customers are talking bad about something, what have you resolved? If you've resolved it, just straight up add it to your listing. If customers are continuously talking something good about your product, that's exactly what customers' main pain point is. You're solving that. And that's why customers are continuously leaving you a good review based on that specific feature or benefit. So you need to start adding that to your creatives. Your creatives should scream if any of your reviews and multiple five-star reviews talking about the exact same good point that you have. Your creatives should scream about that, that I'm the product that is that contains solution to that problem that is urging people to leave five-star reviews. And if there's multiple one-star reviews, if you've resolved it, and if there's multiple of those, you know that this is what's causing the customers most amount of problem, that they are buying it, but because this is such a huge problem for them, they're actually taking out the time to leave a one-star review to you because of this issue. And if you've resolved it, you should straight away mention it big hand, because even if you've resolved it, you know that's, you know, that your five-star review, your one-star review is not going to come from that problem because you have resolved it. But you know that it used to concern your customers a lot. So that's one of the most important feature that you need to add to your creatives. So I'm not a very creative person, quite honestly, Mike, but I'm extremely data-driven. And when I see brands using AI to tell, AI actually tells them what their features and benefits are, it confuses me a bit, because I'd say that your customers are actually telling you a huge amount of customer feedback. Mm-hmm. Listen to that. And you can use AI to scrape off reviews from your competitors to have a better understanding of what you can include into your creatives. But do not use AI just to tell you that these are your benefits, these are your features, when you already have got a gold mine of data sitting in your product detail page.
Okay. I can feel your passion, man. Sounds great. I'm getting excited too. I'm getting motivated to improve my brand now. So we're getting a little bit over our time, but I think this was a fascinating discussion. And I think those last points especially was really valuable. I appreciate your time. I know you're so busy on the road and everything. Okay, so it's been a fascinating conversation. What are some ways people can find you and consider working with your agency?
Yeah, so people can actually reach out to us at info@makebrandsbig.com. And then I'm on LinkedIn as well. My LinkedIn's username is Basil Zedi. And if you can just open up your URL to BasilZedi-makebrandsbig, that's where you can reach out to me as well. Yeah.
Perfect, perfect. And then it was a pleasure. Actually, we really enjoyed having you and your partner at the summit this past November. And I believe you had a great time there. And I don't know if you want to share some things about the summit that you experienced.
Yeah, so I think Cross Border Summit, quite honestly, it was our first major event. And I think that was one of the best events. I'm definitely going to revisit you guys soon.
Okay.
There were huge amount of learnings, I believe. And I don't think that I will be admitting it just 6 months from now, but my clients actually saw that, okay, there are some result differences and there are some mindset shifts that you're bringing in to a brand. And I did mention that I was actually sitting in with a lot of big minds, and I was sitting with them at the round table, and we spent hours and hours in some of the best days of 2025 with each other. So a lot of those learnings were actually implemented in there. I remember me talking to Bud about one of the brands that we had, and he was just listening. He said, everything's going good. You should just start launching more SKUs. And
yeah, I can see him.
If it's so simple, why do I not realize this? And I said, we are reaching out the gap. We should not optimize it more. We should just launch more SKUs. And we actually did it, and it's actually doing good. I think those were some very good mindset shifts. And some very complicated problems for us, which once we told to a lot of guest speakers, they actually simplified it to such an extent where it looked so easy that it looked unreal, that, okay, this is the problem that I'm having, that I should launch more SKUs when I'm trying to talk about tacos, break even, this data, 100 data points. And Tomo just tells me that, okay, you should launch more SKUs. But yeah, I think it was a great learning process.
That's great, man. Thanks for sharing with us. And it's a pleasure to have you on the show and at the summit and the community. Look forward to more and more things together.
Yeah, likewise. I'm also pretty excited to what 2026 brings in. Thank you for having me with you.
Cheers.
This was packed. Halo sales, placement tweaks, Asian brand scaling strategies. Super actionable for anyone feeling the 2026 pressure. Thanks for coming on and sharing so openly.
How can listeners connect with Basel or Make Brands Big if they're ready to level up?
Reach out at info@makebrandsbig.com or find on LinkedIn. Basel Zaidi, Make Brands Big. And Basel gave some great shout out to the Cross-Border Summit. Those roundtable chats and mindset shifts are still paying off months later. If you're looking for in-person connections like that, check out future events at crossbordersummit.com.
Thanks for listening, everyone. If this helped, drop a quick review. It means a lot. Forge your own path. Keep adapting. And we'll catch you next time.
To get more info about running an international business, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.